you as a lifter or an athlete, but it's essential for all of us for a healthy, long, high quality life. That's a bit about me.
Bienvenido a otro episodio de Hipertrophy,
un podcast que gira en torno al entrenamiento de fuerza convencional, la nutrición en estética corporal y otros hábitos importantes como el sueño, el descanso y la gestión del estrés.
Todo desde la teoría hasta la práctica. Nuestra misión
es reducir la brecha de información que existe en México,
aportando un pensamiento crítico y práctico.
Sin más preámbulos, comenzamos.
Bienvenidos sean una vez más al podcast de Hipertrophy. En esta ocasión tenemos un invitado de lujo, pero antes de presentarlo, les recuerdo que en Hipertrophy somos una plataforma de entrenamiento, ni más ni menos que la primera en toda Latinoamérica para que como coaches puedan llevar a sus clientes y como entusiastas del fitness puedan llevar rutinas que, por ejemplo, han hecho Lau, Juan, Sergio, yo, etc. Y también tienen recursos educativos totalmente gratuitos, como lo son este podcast, así como las entradas del blog, que ya vamos para casi 100, así que espero que disfruten todo ese contenido, espero que disfruten de la plataforma y pues sin más. El día de hoy contamos con la muy grata presencia de Jared Maynard, con quien personalmente ya había tenido el gusto de conversar en dos ocasiones en mi Instagram, en los live streams que suelo hacer. Y pues bueno, en esta ocasión quisimos invitarlo para hablar un poquito acerca de su historia, acerca de particularmente cómo enfrentar el dolor en el entrenamiento, cómo ser resilientes ante cualquier imprevisto, situación adversa en el propio entrenamiento y demás. Así que, pues, no tengo duda que será un gran episodio, pero antes de comenzar, les cedo la palabra a Juan, Lau, Sergio, para que nos digan cómo están y podamos arrancar con Jared.
Ah, nosotros, increíble, la verdad, muy agradecidos de que tenemos a Jared por acá. Quisiera adelantar que la plática, una vez que nosotros nos presentemos, va a ser en inglés. Jared habla inglés, entonces vamos a hacer todo lo posible porque sea en su idioma. Ahí con las deficiencias, pero sabemos que podemos sacarlo adelante. Y pues nada, estamos listos y muy emocionados porque este tema en la evidencia científica, me gustaría dejarlo claro, sabemos que más masa muscular disminuye el tiempo de estancia hospitalaria, mejora el pronóstico, recuperación y pues prácticamente la calidad de vida de los usuarios que tienen mayor cantidad de músculo, pues les va mejor en el tiempo hospitalario, infecciones nosocomiales y también una vez que regresen a su vida cotidiana. Así que de eso se va a tratar este episodio. Pero vamos a dar el intro un poquito más adelante. Por eso se llama así, el músculo y el pronóstico clínico. Así que adelante, Lau, Sergio.
Oh, pues muy emocionada. La verdad es que ya he escuchado las dos conversaciones que tuvo Dani por ahí con Jared, al igual que la que tuvo Jared con, creo que todavía estaba Omar, Isof, en Iron Culture, con Eric Helms también. Es un tema a mí, lo he dicho muchas ocasiones, que me apasiona la capacidad del cuerpo de reponerse y de sobreponerse a situaciones que no pensaríamos y que la verdad creo que nos dan, desde un punto de vista, mucha gratitud con que, por ejemplo, el día de hoy podemos estar aquí los cinco conversando. Creo que nadie está pasando por una situación difícil en ese sentido, pero también que cuando de pronto suceden cosas que pueden interrumpir nuestra salud o afectarla, pues saber que el conocer estas historias te da como que una fuerza adicional para poder afrontarlas, ¿no? O sea, a diferencia de, es algo que nunca nadie ha vivido, quién sabe qué vaya a pasar conmigo, ¿no? Te da un poquito más de certidumbre y con eso, pues probablemente todo vaya saliendo mejor.
First of all, Jared, an honor to be here with us. And now change our language to Spanish. Y pues en verdad muy emocionado el poder tener la participación de Jared. Realmente me encanta justo eso que comentaste, Lau, esa historia, ese background de cada uno de los entrenadores y qué es lo que te toca vivir y que muchas veces a partir de esto es como que inicia tu misión, tu propósito, que ves el entrenamiento mucho más allá de solo levantar pesas y que tienes la capacidad de poder transmitir todo esto a tus clientes, ¿no? En el caso de Jared, el haber atravesado todo esto, el ver el reflejo de qué tan fuerte es el cuerpo humano, ¿no? La habilidad que tiene como para reponerse, toda esa trayectoria al final ha impactado en él, ¿no? En cómo lo gestionó, en cómo lo llevó a cabo, el cómo pudo navegar esas aguas que en ocasiones nos quejamos por cosas más mínimas y de repente el exponerte a esas historias y saber todo lo que puede pasar te abre una mentalidad de eso, de esa gratitud, de ver que no solo te pasa a ti, hay otras personas que están viviendo algo fuerte. Y a raíz de todo esto, ¿cómo ha logrado llevarlo a su coaching, ¿no? Y qué tanto impacta ahora en las personas que acuden a él, que lo que buscamos como entrenadores, ¿no? Poder llevar el coaching a un nivel que promueva longevidad, un bienestar integral. Y pues nada, darse cuenta que esto va mucho más allá del entrenamiento. Así que un placer poder compartir con personas que tienen muchísimo conocimiento, experiencia y una historia única que contar.
So, Jared, just to kickstart the topic, and I promise you, man, we're not talking ill, talking trash about yourself in Spanish. I promise you the translator afterwards. We would love to have a little bit of your background, all your life experience, man, because that's a great starting point, like Sergio alluded in Spanish. Now, based from that, all your perspectives as an athlete, as a powerlifter, as a coach, and I think I can safely assume as a human being, changed from the whole experience. So I think that would be a good starting point, brief recap on how was all the situation, how it came to be, where are you now?
Absolutely. Well, first off, Dan, Laura, Sergio, Juan, thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be with you guys. And yeah, I'm Jared. I'm a physiotherapist up in Canada. I'm a powerlifter strength coach. I'm the co-owner of Rebuild Stronger, which is a coaching company that helps lifters, competitive and otherwise, come back from injury, perform at higher levels. We work with everybody from total beginners to literally world level competitors and national champions. And my journey here really began as a kid where I wasn't athletic. I hated sports. I was always picked last. I was a really fat, chubby kid and had no self-confidence. And it took a while to find any sort of sport or activity that I could do and liked. And it took martial arts, maybe because I got to hit people. I don't know. But martial arts started it. And then it turned into American football, not the real football. And then led me into staying in the gym because I started lifting weights to be bigger and stronger for the football field. And then once football finished at the end of high school for me, I needed something to keep doing. So I stayed in the gym, kept lifting, trying to get bigger and stronger. For a while, I wanted to compete in bodybuilding, in natural bodybuilding. Didn't end up being the right fit for me because I was also on the path to becoming a physical therapist. Because I knew I wanted to be in the health field and help people. I thought I wanted to be a doctor. And then I realized how much school it took to be a doctor. And I realized I didn't have the heart for that. So, you know, physiotherapy was the next best thing to me. So getting into physical therapy school, with where I was in life, it wasn't a good match to keep focusing on bodybuilding. So powerlifting was my rebound girlfriend, essentially. And I've stuck with that ever since. But through this whole process of learning more about the human body, becoming a physical therapist, I've now been practicing and out of school for 10 years. I've found a couple of things. One is that I really love training and the process, essentially this continuous spectrum of injury and rehab all the way to performance and doing whatever it is that you want to do, if it's competing at the world level or if it's just being strong because you want to be able to pick up your kids in 10 years. That can all be done. And I find a lot of value in working with people through that. I've also been injured a whole bunch myself with hamstring injuries and back injuries. So it's given me perspective every single time, even though I try to avoid injury like all of us probably try to do, it still happens. So learning what it's like to be hurt, to deal with pain, to rebuild from that position, I keep finding that helps me to then give that better to the people that I work with. I used to work in the clinic. I'm now online entirely. And it really came to a head 2 years ago when I got sick with a really rare hyperinflammatory syndrome. It's a deadly disease called HLH. And basically, it can either be genetic or it can be triggered because of an infection, a different autoimmune disease, or a cancer. For me, it was an infection. And this whole process started off with me feeling sick, like I had a flu or the cold. And then over about 3 weeks or so, I kept getting worse and worse and worse until I was in a state of organ failure, had to go on life support. I was on life support for 5 weeks in a coma, and the doctors were preparing my wife and my parents to say goodbye to me. I'm married with three little girls at home, and miraculously, I started to recover in the ICU and had this really long journey back from going in, weighing about 194 pounds, waking up after life support, weighing about 150, and only really surviving in part because I had enough muscle on my body to survive when I wasn't eating, drinking, or couldn't take in much nutrition because I was so sick. And having built all of that muscle, having spent all of that time in the gym, training for football, and then training for bodybuilding, and then training for powerlifting, that's what helped to transform my life before getting sick. It made me more confident. It made me more resilient. It made me a better man, father, husband, coach. And it's also what quite literally saved my life and allowed me to build back faster after HLH. And there's a lot of other details that go into the story. But within a year, just over a year of getting out of the hospital, I got out May 1st of 2023. I competed in powerlifting again on May 25th of 2024. I hit a couple of lifetime PRs. I did the same thing a few months later in August. And it's really brought, as you said, Dan, my perspective is on a few things to shift. And it's really just made it more clear how essential strength is, not just to, you as a lifter or an athlete, but it's essential for all of us for a healthy, long, high quality life. So that's a bit about me.
So I have to say something. You first said, I wanted to go to medicine school. I didn't. So you did well, really. You did very well. It's hard. I know it's long, especially it's long. So you feel like it's never gonna end. So really good. Yeah, and damn, there's too much because sometimes, for example, I'm just a father, no? I have a daughter, 2 years old, and I feel that like really hard. Managing that, it's really hard. The sleep is poorer, no? Rest is poorer. Your responsibilities are just too much. And when you say, I had 3 children and I had a potentially deadly disease, and I'm many through that, it's like, damn, how could you do that? I think that's pretty much perspective, and it's admirable. It's awesome. Congrats. And I want to say, everything you did before that happened, the training, the muscle, the patience about this is just worth it because you're still here. If it wouldn't happen, you maybe wouldn't be here, right? So congrats, and we are so honored to have you here just because this is like a case study. I know, so
yeah.
In a scientific manner, it's awesome, but it's also in an humanistic manner, awesome. Right.
Thank you for that. And to your point, I remember the first moments as I started to come out of the coma on life support, because things were really blurry for me once I got into the hospital. I was worried about what was going on. My wife was worried about what was going on. We didn't know what was happening yet before we had the diagnosis. And my memory, I was already delirious. But I was worried about getting back home to my family and my children. And as I was in the hospital, life support for 5 weeks, the hospital in total for about 3.5 months. For my daughters, I left the day before my twins' 5th birthday, because our first 2 children were twins. So we didn't start slow. We started fast. But I left with my wife the day before their 5th birthday. And I just didn't come home. And that was really traumatic for my daughters, for my wife. She had to explain this to them. And once I started to wake up after the coma, I was just heartbroken that I wasn't with them. They were my motivation, my main motivation to do whatever work I needed to do to get back to them. And you're 100% right. I mean, I was told by the doctors and multiple nurses afterwards, had I not been as fit and as strong as I was when it happened, we wouldn't be having this conversation and my girls wouldn't have their dad anymore. So you're exactly right. And it's something that I'm extremely grateful for. I consider myself incredibly blessed. It's something that I didn't, it's like an insurance policy I didn't know I was building up. It's something you hope you never have to use, but when you have to use it, you're really glad when you have it.
I'm going to make a point for something not related to muscle hypertrophy, strength, or anything like that. And your story kind of reminded me when I was about 9-10 years old, my dad got into a crash accident.
Oh.
And he was in the ICU for a month or so. It felt longer than that, but the long story short, when he came back from that, and because he broke his ribs like in multiple mini pieces, one of the ribs inch, one of the not the, the livers, the pulmon. I lost the word.
Lungs.
Lungs, yeah, one of the lungs. So it was catastrophic. But one of the things he said after that, because also all the nurses and the doctors thought he was going to die, was he had, like, in his mind, as long as he can remember and have, like, consciousness of that, the image of myself and my sister. So I think that even if we're going to go through this conversation around muscle and strength, and all of those topics are really interesting for the five of us, I think also having that social support is something that's really, really, really wonderful, and so having like a reason, because maybe, I don't know, but maybe if we had to deal with this type of things like sickness, injury, all by just ourselves, probably it wouldn't matter the amount of muscle we could have. Maybe the outcome wouldn't be as good.
I would agree. Thank you for sharing that, Laura. And I would absolutely agree for my part, because having the social support and motivation on my side, the desire to get back home to my wife and children was, again, my main motivating factor. But then also having the support from them and from my colleagues and friends and people that I knew and people that I didn't know, to make sure that my family was taken care of while I was in the hospital. That, for me at least, gave me some peace of mind, so I could focus on doing what I needed to do to get back to them. But 100%, even in a less critical setting, I think back to my first big injury as I got into powerlifting. I strained my hamstring right after physical therapy school, which that sucked, because here I am, this physical therapist, and I'm hurting myself. And I'm like, what the hell, man? It's not supposed to happen. And I tried to take care of it myself. I tried that for about 2 years. I would make some progress and I would get worse, and I'd make progress and get worse. And that was really frustrating. And it was only when I actually got support and help and worked with another physical therapist who I consider a friend now, his name is Dr. Quinn Hennick, did I actually start to make real progress. And I learned a whole lot about how to do that. It's part of what helped me to see, oh, here's another way that you can help people as a physical therapist or a coach or whatever capacity. And it helped me learn a, a lot of lessons that I still use daily now. So I fully agree that social support is really important.
And I think, Jared, it's an understatement just to say that strength saves lives and your story, your background, given that you had to relearn how to talk, how to eat. It's mind-blowing when you get into the details of your story and how we're just having this conversation today, given that, for instance, for us gym rats or lifters or fitness enthusiasts, let's say we have a little pain sensation in the elbow, in the wrist, or whatever. Sometimes we can be overly dramatic about it, which is not to judge, not to say it's bad per se. But when you have such perspective as yourself, it's like, well, perhaps I can confront the sensation. I can learn. I can educate myself about pain, put it into perspective. And most importantly, I think, keep lifting for the sake of lifting, because we actually love this weird sport that it's lifting. And also have a better quality of life, man. And that's one thing that originally, when I first heard you on the, actually, Laura already mentioned it, the Idol Culture podcast, it blew my mind, because that was kind of my case, the one I'm describing. I have this constant pain in my leg, and you know, you get sad about it, you get, I don't know, preoccupied all the time. And then to have such perspective, and not just the perspective, the enthusiasm, the learning that we can get from it, it really blew my mind. So that's when I first reached out to you, and I keep doing it, because I keep referring your work and your story to other people, because there's so much to learn from it. And well, going from there, I would love to hear, how was your, not the training to learn how to walk again per se, but the mentality side of things, because what kept you going, man? Because I think that's something we can all learn.
Totally. And first, again, gratitude for you, Dan. Like, you got to know that it's mutually beneficial and appreciated. Like, I've always enjoyed every single one of our chats, because I mean, I learn things. You ask great questions, and it prompts me to think about things that are meaningful to me and to the people that I work with and want to keep helping. So thank you for that. What kept me going mentally? I mean, setting the stage a little bit more, because you said it correctly. After life support, I was still in the hospital, and I was not good. Like, I was entirely dependent on other people to wash me, change my bedpans, I had a catheter. I couldn't sit up and get out of bed if I wanted to. My life depended on it. I just wouldn't be able to do it, because I had lost so much muscle and strength, and I was still so frail and weak. And I had to learn, how to speak and breathe on my own again, because I had a ventilator for a time down my throat. And then they only leave that down your throat for a little bit. And then after that, they do a trach and they punch it through the throat. So kind of hard to eat, drink, and talk after that. And being a physiotherapist was a double-edged sword as I was in the hospital and like starting to understand what was happening. Because the good thing was, I understood more of what was happening. I could understand what the doctors were saying to me, what the nurses were saying, because I'd been trained to some degree on some of this. The bad thing was, I understood what was happening, and I understood like how long of a road this was realistically going to be for me. And there, I'm not going to lie, there were a lot of really dark, hard moments. One thing about being in the ICU is like, if you're sleeping at really weird hours. So you're awake at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, and there are nurses and people taking care of patients like me, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But like, you got a lot of time to think at those weird dark hours of the morning, waiting for the day to actually start. And that was a lot of reflection time for me, where I had to decide over and over again, was I actually willing to walk this long road without any guarantees, when I had lost so much of myself that I was proud of, that I depended on physically, but also mentally? Because I don't think you can go through that without comparing yourself to who you were, what you used to be able to do, and have all of these questions and worries, you know, run through your head. So mentally, I had to decide, was I willing to fight and to try? Because that also means like being willing to fail. There's always that possibility and not knowing how far you can get. But like we started talking about, for me, my biggest motivations were my wife and my daughters. And if I could think these thoughts, if I could take any breaths, even if I were helped by a machine, then I still had a chance and I was going to go down fighting. And also getting back to the clients that I worked with, because when I went down, I had, you know, probably around 50, 55 clients or so. I did have two assistant coaches who worked with me, and God bless them. They stepped up to help take care of everybody. But basically, I wanted to get back to my people. So in some moments, it was really easy to make that decision. And in some, it was just really difficult. And I had to come back to it hour by hour, or sometimes minute by minute, as I was learning to stand and walk. And I had to deal with the nausea from the chemotherapy that was part of the treatment. So it was difficult. But again, going back to Laura's point, the social support, getting messages from my family, from clients, from people who were just thinking of me, rooting for me, that's what I drew on to keep going, especially when I was in those periods or those moments where I just felt like I had nothing in the tank. And I'm grateful for it because it kept me going.
Okay, so I was waiting just to see if Danny and Laura or Sergio was going to say something. But I was a little intrigued. I was here just asking ChatGPT the rate survival of this autoimmune disease. And I was thinking, how many people will be in a statistical that will be active, will have a really good muscle mass, and will survive? Because I don't think it's just that. I think it's about the psychological factors, right? Yes. It's like, I have a motivation. I want to do this because I have to believe I can. If I don't believe that, it won't happen. I have to try to chew away again, to walk again. If it's just so much, I won't even try it. It's like, please, just stop. I don't want it anymore, right? Yes. So again, this is just not like, when you have the statistical manner, is like the exception. It's like the one subject that move all the graphic and the median of the results, right? Yes. So I think this is just more about muscle mass, and this is more about the clinical presentation of the disease is about mentality. And what did you view before you having this disease about the mentality that you could, that you did try and do that effort, even when other adverse outcomes possible, outcomes you could have, right? So yes. I was wondering that. What you think make you have that mentality? It was just the motivation, or you built it from some other aspect of your life before?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a couple of things. One is I'm really stubborn. Ask my wife. She would tell you that I'm really stubborn. So if there's something that I'm really determined to do, I'm going to do my best to do it. That's been the case pretty well my whole life. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. I'm working on it. But the other piece, which is arguably more important and built on the foundation of maybe my natural predisposition to be stubborn, is building up that motivation under the barbell. without question in my mind, because the barbell does different things for different people. But I think the more that I talk to folks, the more that I keep hearing that it helps them to learn how to do difficult things. And just the very nature of training for something that you can't already do. You're training to achieve a certain level of performance. You're trying to build more muscle. You're trying to hit a 315 bench press or a 600 deadlift or whatever it is. You, if you're thinking about that, you probably can't do it right now, which means that you have to take certain actions over a long enough period of time with an appropriate plan to get to that point eventually. Which means that you have to push yourself. And by pushing yourself, you run the risk of failure. And just statistically speaking, if you're training hard, you're going to fail at some point, probably a lot. And that gives you feedback on where you currently are, where your progress has been made, what you have to still work on as you move forward. And, you know, failure, I mean, if you're anything like me, and you want, most of us want to win. Most of us want to succeed. No, I don't know many people who are like, yeah, failure, and gets them excited. But it's learning and it's necessary. And it can be, I think it can be a really big advantage if you look at it that way. So for me, I think of every time that I stepped up to a heavy barbell for a top set of squats or loaded up a deadlift that I didn't know for sure if I could do. I thought I could, but there's a chance that it's not going to go. Or every time that through my different rehab journeys for my hamstring or my back injuries, you know, I thought this might feel okay. There's a chance that it might not. It takes courage. It takes a willingness to try and fail, to go anyway, and to risk that failure and to understand that even if you do fail, and you can't do it right now, you do believe it's possible. Otherwise, like you said, you probably wouldn't be taking these actions anyway. And if it's possible, you have a chance at it. This failure isn't final, but it's a teacher. It's feedback, and you'll be back. So, yeah, for me, starting off with lifting weights in my parents' basement for football, I thought, oh, this is cool. And then I started to want to see how much I could dumbbell bench press or how much I could squat. And then at a certain point, once the newbie gains stopped, it wasn't so easy and I had to try harder. And then I started to fail. Again, strategic programming, you want to avoid failing perhaps all the time, maybe outside of strategic sets that push your muscles past volitional failure, you know, long length partials, things like that. That might be a different conversation. But through that, and then training for bodybuilding and then powerlifting, I really believe that that is what allowed me to build the mental resilience to make it through. And again, it wasn't perfect. Like I had my moments where I was like, fuck this. Sorry, I don't know if you guys swear. Apologies. And I needed the support of other people around me to keep going. So that's what I think.
So it's like it's the acceptance of the ¿cómo se dice incertidumbre?
Uncertainty,
right? It's I accept the uncertainty. I don't know if it's gonna work or not, but that is bodybuilding. I don't know if I am building muscle or not. I'm trying. If in 3 months, 1 year, it happens, okay. If not, what did I do and what could I do better, right? Yes. So pretty much the same. So I know it's like the reductionist part, but mm-hmm. It's pretty much the same principle.
Right? Yes.
So, yeah, awesome.
And one thing that this point that you made, both Jared and Juan, I think lifting and training and powerlifting and bodybuilding and all these forms of resistance training can be such a good playground to put ourselves in a situation that's not as risky as being in the ICU, for example. But you can learn those things. So I think that's a valuable thing that we can teach also to the people we're coaching, to ourselves. I think that's a great point, that you not only the training help you to build the muscle and the physical strength to overcome this situation, but also give you the playground and the opportunities to learn what comes after a failure. What can you learn from that?
I agree 100%. And, you know, I really like how you frame that, Laura. It is a playground, and it is a lower stakes place to learn these things, which not only can help you when you need it. I mean, and heaven forbid people end up in a medical crisis like I did, but I think just generally in life, I mean, we all fail at a lot of stuff, unless you're naturally born gifted at whether it's whatever work you do or communicating with people or relationships or school or anything. There's all this component of learning, and at some point you're probably not as good as you want to be, and there's growth that's necessary. So, you know, not only for myself, but also for clients and friends, and as I've watched them go through their own journeys, they say the same things. Like, they learn that they are capable of doing hard things, they're capable of more than they thought they were before. They learn to accept the uncertainty and still step forward with a reasonable plan. They learn how to have fun in the process to some degree. And the ones who embrace that process and learn how to do it reasonably well, they usually get where they want to go to some degree. And not only has this helped me literally be alive right now, but it's made me a better husband and father and coach and friend. Because another thing that it's helped me to do is just feel like I have more to give. Because if I'm training and growing and pushing myself that way, for me, it's a place to put the stress of the day. It's a place to take care of myself. It can be a social outlet. I mean, I train alone in my basement now, but I used to be at a gym with other people. And then by doing those things, it gives me more energy to put into my family, into my clients, into people who need it. So I fully agree. There's so many benefits to it.
I really admire this, Jared, because, you know, something I always try to communicate to my clients is that we're looking for, yes, a physical change, but we can have a lot more than just that, right? Like all the good habits, the mentality, the discipline. If you can take all this advantage to your daily day, you can be a better person, a better father, you know, a better son. And that's something that I really, really appreciate, how we can impact in our clients, right? So I really appreciate to learn a lot from persons like you, you know, because I have my history, I have my background, I have my own problems and my journey, but have the opportunity to learn from another's professional journey give me a lot of skills. You know, we have like the knowledge, but there are some skills that we don't learn in the school. Yes. And like, okay, I want to learn these skills to use it with my clients. I want to make you a question, and it's, what impact do you hope to have on the people that you coach, talking beyond just the physical results? I think this is like something the people need to start to thinking about.
It's a really important question. It's probably the most important question that you can be asked or answer as a coach, physical therapist, anybody who's in service of other people. So I'm glad that you asked me. For me, I want people to know and become as strong as possible, and specifically as strong physically, mentally, emotionally, so that when life hits them, they get sick, they lose their job, some crisis happens, they feel like they can almost hit back, where they're not a victim, where they can choose not to be a victim. That doesn't mean that the issues they're dealing with aren't painful, aren't horrible, and come with a bunch of emotions, but that they're not going to be helpless, and that they've learned that they can overcome and rebuild from the ground up if necessary, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and that whatever crisis that they're dealing with, whatever hardship, this is no different. And pulling from what we've talked about already, you know, believing that it's possible, knowing that they have the resilience themselves and they can draw on the support of others, and that there's going to be uncertainty, but that's okay. They can deal with uncertainty. That's really the impact. That's the legacy that I want to leave for everybody who in this life I can work with, whatever capacity. I want them to be jacked and strong, or whatever, however they define that for themselves. Because some people, again, want to hit certain numbers. Some people want to start competing and powerlifting at a high level. And some people just want to like feel good. They just want to train for life. And I'm cool with all of that. But when I'm no longer working with them, and certainly at the end of my life, when I'm dead and gone, I want that impact to last in them, in their children, in their spouses, and create that ripple effect through generations. That's really what I'm after.
I think it really will happen. And it's a really great answer, because maybe we go all the way back when we are a child. No, it's not the same when we have our fathers or that give us everything, and it everything is easy. We have TV, we have video games, we have someone who watch us when we are developing. But what about if we can't turn on the TV and we are worried? It's the same, okay, turn on the TV, or what you're gonna do about it? No, you're worried, what you're gonna do about it? And that's a really different question, because if anything becomes hard, instead of them, where is the solution? It's what can I do to find a solution to this problem, right? Even in our developing as a child, adolescent, if our fathers gave us everything versus gave us some challenges, right? I think it maybe do a difference too.
I would agree. And, you know, I think you would understand this for sure as a father. I think you said you have a daughter that's two years old. That's awesome.
2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing. I think that anyone who becomes a parent, you have to start answering these questions about how you're going to raise your child, and especially how you're going to challenge them. And it can be hard. I'll speak just for myself. I see a problem, and my instinct is to go fix it, because it's easy. I can go fix it, take care of my kiddo, you know, whatever problem she's having. But to your point, that may not actually be the best way to love her or help her learn, you know, at this point where she's frustrated. Real example, she's frustrated that her blocks, what she was building with her blocks, you know, crumbled apart. What I try to do is, one, emotionally comfort her, because my daughters are 7 and almost 5. So like, there's lots of emotion. But then there's a discussion, like, okay, so what happened? She'll tell me. And then there's the decision of, okay, what do you want to do? Because it's broken and you can rebuild it. Maybe you even build it better, or you can just leave it broken and we can be sad about it. And I think what I try to do Lord only knows if it'll pay off as my daughters get older, is having these conversations and making them start to think about these choices. Because to your point, those choices exist whether we acknowledge them or not. And if we develop that resilience, that willingness to take ownership of these things that maybe they weren't your fault. Maybe life just happened. Okay. Yeah, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility to decide how you're going to respond. And it's something that I'm still working on myself. I'm so far from perfect. And I've been made aware of that recently. But also, as I've been made aware of these areas of my life where I have failed or I haven't hit the mark that I've wanted to, there's the choice. It's like, okay, what are you going to do about it? And yeah, I think that's probably a journey that most of us are on. And I think it's a good one.
And
please go ahead. I don't want to be so
sure, Danny. Okay. Well, I don't have any children. I have two cats and two dogs. not the same at all. But I think sometimes, well, not sometimes, but with coaching with clients, sometimes we also have to take like that role. Like people come to us with stories of failure, stories of maybe someone, I don't know, maybe having some bad relationship, for example, with training or with food, and overdone certain things. And I think that's at least the way I usually approach it. It's not to say, oh, you're wrong, you see, this is broken and you did bad in this. No, first listening, trying to have that empathy, try to let the emotions like come down. But then it's like, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, you're good, you didn't, nothing happened here. No, this is an opportunity to learn a lesson here. So I think as coaches, we also have to take that role of guiding people, working alongside with them, but also not being like that coach that's always clapping or cheering, because sometimes that's not the best thing we can do for our clients. Sometimes we also have to maybe have like a difficult conversations, because in the long run, even if it's going to be uncomfortable for us as well, in the long run, it's going to serve even better for them, but also for us, because it's never easy to have that conversation for both sides. And I think people sometimes think they want that cheerleader, or they want that coach that's always like highlighting the good things. But in reality, no one wants that. Time ago, like about a month or so, I was listening to a podcast with Chris Bumstead and Adam Grant, which is, I'm sure you probably know. And Chris was saying how in the very beginning, well, he says he's always been like super critical with himself, but like in the now that he has built like his business and he's very like successful, he doesn't like people complimenting him, because he knows what he needs to be even better. It's not the compliments, it's what can I do better. So I think there's also like this thing that according to someone's personality, but also like someone's starting point, if they're like a child that just starting out, maybe it's not the best thing for us to like be, oh, you need to do better and better, better, better. But if it's someone that's more experienced and really wants to get like all the success in lifting or bodybuilding or whatever it is, we also need to be strategic with how we coach people to give them not only like the cheerleader, but also the these insights that are gonna make them better. So I think being a parent can make you a great coach. I have never dreamed about having children, but sometimes I think I might be that might make me even better as a coach if I had them. But I like my sleep so much that I'm not so sure that I'm gonna make that call.
That's reasonable. It's very reasonable. And I think you're right, Laura. I also think it works the other way around, where as you develop as a coach, like you become a better parent, or at least you can. So to your point about, helping people understand what they could do better, to get philosophical for a second, I think it was Thomas Aquinas who defined love. And granted, love can have different meanings depending on what language and what context, but he defined love philosophically, at least the highest kind of love, is to want the good of somebody else separate from yourself. And we have to ask ourselves, I think, you know, even or especially when we've got the option of saying the nice thing or cheerleading them or shielding them from the hard truths, that's easier for us. We want them to feel good, but is that really loving? Is that really in their best interest? And I agree fully that depending on the person, depending on the context, like you're likely going to deliver it differently. And even, you know, for somebody who either is a child or is starting out in a particular field or a skill, yeah, you might share more of the things that they did well because they need to understand that. I think for people who have a tendency to really latch on to negative feedback, and they'll just block out all the positive things and they'll only focus on the one negative thing, there might need to be choices about not shielding them. It's not about not sharing the hard truths, but also, you know, I'm talking about myself here because I am the person who'd be like, yeah, but that one guy said that one thing. And sometimes I need a little slap in the face verbally, like, stop it. Yes, that one thing is there. Yes, you need to fix it. Don't forget about these 9 other good things because they give me different information. And yeah, I think the more loving thing, the thing that we can do as coaches, as people who work with other people, is make sure we are helping them understand what they're doing well, what they need to do better, and ideally show them how to do better and give them options. And the more advanced they get, the more agency and choices they can make on their own, the less we probably have to show them and how to do it. And the more we can just help them realize what their options are. And I think that helps to, again, promote independence and agency. And it's ultimately better in the long run, even though it involves hard conversations and painful moments, which, again, I'm personally and professionally, I'm in the midst of that right now, but I do believe it's going to serve me in the long term.
You already alluded a little bit of philosophy, and that's something I wanted to ask you, Jared. But one thing I read from, not the whole manga, but from Vagabond, the manga based on Miyamoto Musashi, is that the strongest people are also the most kind. So I think that applies to you. But I think it's a little bit dangerous because when you've been through what you have been through, it becomes, I assume, a little hard to have empathy towards people in pain, towards people, I don't know, feeling comfortable. I think it's a new challenge that arises, at least from my perspective. If I've been through this life or death situation and this person is experiencing perhaps something not so threatening, how can I have empathy? And also, how could I not remain in that state of survival and go towards a state of continuously growing as a person, to be there for your family and not inside one's head, surviving? And I don't know if I'm being clear, but I think it's a philosophical challenge that arises. And I wanted to ask you, how do you deal with this side of things?
Yeah, that's a I think if there's anybody who it's hard to have empathy with, for me, it's myself. And what I mean is, I was talking with a mentor of mine. His name's Frank. And Frank hasn't been through this specifically, but he's been through plenty of traumatic events himself and has had a lot of family members who have gone through medical crises and stuff. And he told me, it's remarkable how quickly somebody who goes through a literal life and death situation can come back to worrying about the bullshit and get so caught up in the day-to-day stuff that really won't matter in 5 years. And I took that lesson to heart. And damn it, it's true. Especially for me over the last, call it the last year. It's not been the case that I've forgotten what I've gone through. And certainly my perspective has still shifted where some things I can recognize more quickly, like, okay, that doesn't matter. I'm feeling some type of way about it, but I don't have to because I almost died. And like, that's not what I want to give my time and energy to. But it's still tricky where, you know, stuff that I work on for my business or the other work that I'm involved in or some other issue, which, to be fair, not all of them are super trivial. It might involve the house that we live in. We got to fix it. There's other issues. We got to fix it. And I need to, and am in the process of kind of coming up for air and not just being focused solely every day, every week on fixing all of these problems, but coming up and looking at my life and my conduct. And if there's anybody I got to be real short with and critical of, it's got to be myself first and realize, what are you even doing? Why do you care about those things? Don't you remember what you've gone through? Don't you remember that life is short? Memento mori, which you got tattooed on your arm. How often do you look at that and actually remember? There you go, right? And look at it. I look at it all the time, but how often do I really see it? So that's where it's hard. It's hard to have empathy. I'd phrase it more as it's allowed me to become more honest with myself. And I need to do that more and more frequently. For other people, I actually find, at least for right now, it helps the empathy. Yes, you're 100% right that lifters, myself included, sometimes we stub our toe. We're like, my squat day is ruined. I can't possibly squat. And it's like, all right, bro, I think you're going to live. It's probably going to be fine. But for even including those situations or people who are dealing with other stuff, I hear a lot. People are like, yeah, my situation is nothing compared to yours. And I want my story and my example, whatever I can share, to be impactful. And I do think there's value for all of us to have perspective of like, I'm dealing with this right now and it's causing me these problems and I don't like it for these reasons. We can look elsewhere. We can look at areas of the world that are torn by war. We can look at people who are in desperate poverty. We can look at people who are sick and dying. And it doesn't mean that our problems go away, but it does put them in perspective. So if my story can do that, I'm beginning to accept that that actually might be valuable. And it still allows me, for right now at least, to, and hopefully continuing, to have empathy and to be like, I can understand that. I can understand where it comes from. And like, may I share something that you may find valuable, whether it's a kind word or a story or something. So yeah, that's where I'm at with it right now.
Well, I have time still, but I want to be respectful with the rest of us here. So shall we continue or what do you say?
I've got another 5-10 minutes or so. How about you guys?
Well, regarding what you just said, Jared, I think we can't live two lives at the same time. So we can't never know what's happening on the other side. I have times when I when I've been like I don't know, like a client is worried or is frustrated about something, and I'm like, how can he or she be frustrated for this? It's like minor detail, but sometimes we forget that. Same with for example, the muscle development or strength development we have, we've built that because of the things we have been exposed to. And I also think that there are some people that have had it easier. Mm-hmm. So they haven't had the opportunity. Life hasn't put them in situations that allow them to build that resilience or to build that hard shell. So I think that's something to keep in mind. And also that maybe I can say, like, right now when I touch the wood here, I think I've had it easy, like in reality. And sometimes I have that, I don't know if that's too pessimistic, but sometimes I have like this thought that things are too good. Maybe something's around the corner that's gonna maybe throw everything away. But I take that thought as also a reminder of how good things are right now. So we don't know what we don't know, and to keep in mind that, yeah, things may be good right now, but that doesn't mean that you don't need to practice with the small stuff right now, how to be more calm, how to not react as much, because you might need it. For example, you didn't know probably that when you had that hamstring injury, that maybe at that time that was like the biggest thing, I don't know. But you didn't know that there was something coming later that that's gonna be even bigger, but you prepared yourself for that with that situation. So maybe with injury and illness and all these things, when they happen, we can use them for two things. One, we want to get better from that situation, but also thinking, well, when I come out of this, this is going to make me better and prepare me better for things that I don't know, but maybe could happen in the future. So maybe I'm getting a little bit more philosophical as well, but I really appreciate this conversation, because we usually don't have like opportunities to talk about these topics, like not only in the podcast, but with people. It's about vulnerability and fear, and no one wants to talk about that. It's also a hard and difficult conversation.
Agreed. No, and I love I think inevitably, if you're honest and you're willing to dig or pull on the string long enough, we're going to get to philosophy. And I think that's a good thing. Because I agree. I mean, the Latin phrase comes to mind, si vis pacem, para bellum. If you want peace, prepare for war. And not only is that an excellent line in one of the John Wick movies, but I think it goes to what you were saying, where the likelihood of something negative or challenging coming your way eventually is extremely high. So I don't think it's pessimistic to look at where you are at any one point in time and recognize the things that are going well, the things that feel easy or easier, and think, wow, I haven't really been tested either at all or in a while, or I haven't been tested in this area of my life the way that I could be. And I think two things then. I don't think one needs to go and experience certain kinds of hardships. Like, you probably don't want to make yourself impoverished and spend all of your money and then become homeless. Like, just test yourself. Not that that's what you're saying, but like, we don't need to go and do that. That would be unwise and unadvisable. And yet, the disciplines that we engage in the gym are a way to prepare yourself and harden your body and your mind. It can extend to the books that we read and the sort of mental disciplines that we have, spiritual disciplines that we may have. And preparing for the inevitable hardship, just which comes with the reality of being a human living on earth, like it's going to happen. So if anything, I think it's realistic. And I've recently been diving back into books from the author Ryan Holiday. I finished the book Stillness is the Key. I'm now re-listening to The Obstacle is the Way. And I'd read The Obstacle is the Way a long time ago. And the central idea comes from Marcus Aurelius, which is that the impediment to action, the thing that stops us from the action we want to take, advances action. It can force you to become stronger, more resilient, learn lessons, become better. And the what stands in the way becomes the way. And none of that means that the challenges aren't painful. None of that means that the challenges don't suck. None of that means that if you could trade the bad things, you wouldn't, or the things, you wouldn't trade them. But rather, we can prepare ourselves as much as possible for those things. And when they do come around, depending on how we choose to respond to them, we can either learn lessons and let them form us, or build us, or we can let them break us. And I'm so far from perfect with all of this, even after coming through HLH. But what I'm trying to do is let them build me and learn how to get past these challenges. And it's hard, but I do think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think it's been a really super insightful discussion. And speaking of Marcus Aurelius,
wow. There you go.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit cliche at this point, but I think it's really necessary in the time and age that we are currently living in.
Yeah.
And by the way, for the people listening or watching, Juan had to leave early, so there you go. But Jared, also, I don't want to be disrespectful of your time. I think we covered a lot of ground. I'm a sucker for all things philosophy and all things applying all these things to life. I really do appreciate to get the rare opportunity to get to talk about these things within the fitness community, because, well, mental well-being and resilience and mental strength are things perhaps a little bit more important than, dare I say, length and partials or stuff like that, which I also think it's really interesting, really fascinating, but after all, we're human, so yes, we need this kind of discussions. So I don't know if you have any closing remarks, Jared. And if not, I just want to thank you again for your time, for your always availability to get to discuss about, because I know it's a little bit personal to you, because it's not just advocacy, it's about your journey as a human being. So forever, I want to be thankful for that.
Well, thank you, Dan and Laura and Sergio and Juan for inviting me on. And I'm grateful too for, again, this rare opportunity and hopefully, rare opportunity to talk about these things. And hopefully for us and for people who listen, it becomes less rare, because I hope that anybody and everyone who heard us talk and share our thoughts finds something valuable. If there's one lesson or one thing I would leave the listeners with, it would be just understand that hardships are just that, they are hard. And if you decide to let them shape you and you decide to open yourself up to growth and support from people around you, I won't say that it's going to be easy. I think the opposite of that, but I do think it's going to be worth it in building up your physical strength, your mental strength, emotional, spiritual strength. And if there's anything that came up, any things we talked about that were especially insightful or meaningful, or anybody wants to talk about things further, or if you guys want to do this again, I would love to. So just let me know, and happy to always chat about these things.
Well, thank you so much, Jared. We'll be sure to link in the description all your where people can find you. But just finally, where can people find you so people know how to reach you better? Because I think this is gonna leave people wanting to know more about you as a human, but also as a, someone that can help them to navigate those hardships.
Excuse me. You got me. My audio cut up for a second. I'm most active on Instagram. So jared.rebuild_stronger. Come on over, shoot me a message. I'm always eager and happy to hear from anybody. If it's you want to talk training, you want to talk about this episode, you want to talk about Stoic philosophy, I'm open to it all.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much again, and hoping to have you another time around. Thank you, sir. And Danny.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
It's like, you know, something that I always tell to Laura, Danny, and Juan, is like, I really admire them. In this case, I also admire you, and not just because your work and the impact that you have in other persons, you know? It's like the humanity that you have. And that means a lot for me, that you can have a lot of knowledge, experience, but if you don't have that little part of humanity, I think it's not the best way. So thank you a lot for being with us and for giving us that history of you, all your journey and all your experience and knowledge. It's really something so valuable for us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.